morning, everybody. Everyone all right? Yeah. Anybody dry? Makes a change, doesn't it? So, a real pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me. And most importantly, thank you very much to my panelists for getting through all the weather to be here. In no particular order, we have Vicky from The Economist, we have Stuart from Skyscanner, we have Mabubal from DWP, and we have Paul from Network Rail. So blame him, not me. So we're talking about agile security teams. So I have a question for you, the audience. How many of you work in an agile security team? Please raise your hand. Very few of you. How many of you would love to work in an agile security team? Raise your hand. Oh, not convinced then, not convinced. Okay, we'll give it a try. So I'm going to throw this open to the panel. We have this word, this phrase, agile security team. What do you think it means in reality? Because they're just words. Anyone can start.
I'll take a go. For me, an agile security team means one that doesn't have traditional role boundaries, where just because you were hired to be a SOC analyst does not mean you will always be a SOC analyst. Mm-hmm. Being able to duck and dive and change what you do to support the business.
So it's about fluid roles, the ability to grow and develop, to change what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, lovely.
I would say multidisciplined, self-organizing team, taking part in various activities, as mentioned by Vicky, various taken to security, for example, technical to management to actually implementing various mm-hmm. things as well. So
it was almost like building on top of what Vicky was saying yeah. there, which is you got the people who grow and develop and who can change,
yep.
and the team itself then pulls that all together and can react to the business or other needs as necessary.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I agree with what you're saying about kind of potentially changing roles and going outside of your normal job spec. But I guess agility for me is doing things at pace, a kind of experimentational culture, fail forward, fail fast. That's pretty much what we adopt at Skyscanner.
So when you say things like fail forward and fail fast, how do you build that into security? Because we're really risk averse. We don't do anything until we've got thousands of pages of risk analysis and all our controls in place. How do we do that?
I think it's taking calculated risks at any point in time to reach the goals that you're looking to reach. Some old school security people, stick to a mantra of doing things that they've always done in the past, whereas that's not kind of the group of people I'm with who are looking to new ways to do things and secure their data and reputation.
Okay, super. Paul?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And one of the things that I also think is important in an agile security team is a team that feels empowered. You know, they're not asking for permission, they're asking for forgiveness. They're creative, innovative. Mm-hmm. More importantly, as well as collaborative, they're customer focused. So they're working with the business, not to the business, not for the business, but in a collaborative way. And I think they're very important for an agile security team.
But isn't agility also about reacting to outside events? And I'm thinking especially our office is in London Bridge, IT Squared office is in London Bridge. So yesterday we were cordoned off by the recent very sad events. Isn't agility about being able to react to that sort of thing very quickly? Because obviously Network Rail operates London Bridge Station next door to us.
Yeah, and obviously our hearts go out for the people who are affected at the weekend, and I'll say no more than that. Security is a holistic discipline. It transcends people, process, and technology.
Yeah.
And it's also asynchronous. You don't know when an event is going to happen. Mm-hmm. We all heard about WannaCry. That came in Friday evening. Everybody was very upset with that. And you just have to just react. Mm-hmm. Not feel that you're partitioned in when it's 1700, so it's got to be him, it's got to be me.
Yep.
Take the lead, take the initiative, mm-hmm. and get in there. And you have to be adaptable and dynamic. That's just the nature of security now.
Yeah, and you've got to be able to learn extremely quickly. I think WannaCry was a great example of things just escalated over the period of a couple of days. We were joking just before this started about it's okay to not know what you're doing sometimes. You don't always have the answers in security. You've got to know where to go to find some of that information and learn on the spot. But it's okay to not know the answer.
Yeah, in my mind, one of the backbones of agility is resilience. Mm-hmm. We never know what's going to go wrong tomorrow, no matter how much time we spend trying to think about it. It's the unexpected that we have to deal with. Yeah. And the only way you can do that is by being agile, by being able to take the sum total of everything you know and apply it to a new and different situation.
And a lot of this, I guess, is based on actually having good templates, good processes, good incident management and incident response plans that you've tested and rehearsed that provide you with a kind of a spine of knowledge and a spine of learning.
I would say the rehearsal is more important than the documentation.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
At the end of the day, the incident that you face is not the one that you documented. Because mm-hmm. if you could document it, it's not an incident anymore.
Yeah.
It's the stuff that you can't imagine mm-hmm. that you have to respond to. That,
yeah.
And then it's the exercising mm-hmm. that gives you the edge.
Yeah, policies for fill a purpose at a point in time, but they're out of date almost as soon as they've been written. So you can have something that tries to define what you do at any point in time, but they're very often not applicable when you come to actually solving those problems.
Mm-hmm. I think when we play back what happened with WannaCry a few weeks ago, when we look at the drains up and the lesson learned, The incident response protocols were a guideline, they were a ready reckoner, but again, it came back to one thing, agility, innovation. We had to adapt to the changing situation as the intelligence ebbed and flowed. You know, we thought it was XP, then it was that, was it email, was it? We had to move with that. When the kill switch came in, we all had to react to that. It's all about agility, because as Vicky says, you know, it's not an incident if it's choreographed, staged, rehearsed.
Yeah. Okay, so let's see if I can summarize. An agile security team has people who are willing to grow and develop. It is based on expert knowledge. It does have some form of process and procedures and plans that have been exercised regularly and tested to within an inch of their life, I guess. But it's also something that is about leadership, about the ability to try new things, to fail, but to learn. And it's also something that can deal with multiple incidents one after the other, because it has a kind of strength, a resilience, an ability to bounce back after every problem and reset itself. Would that be a good summary of what we've talked about so far?
Yeah.
Right, brilliant. Okay, so when do we get Superman and how do we employ him or her? Because that's the real question, because what we're talking about is great, but where do we find these people?
Well, often you have to develop them from scratch.
Yep.
You know, people come with a certain skill set. It's not always an exact match to the skills you need. But people are actually really, really resilient in and of themselves and are really capable of learning. And one of the tricks that we often miss is not developing people once we've got someone on board.
I think
I'll come back to that one. Sorry, come on.
You know, given that this is a talk about agility, I think what I've personally found with recruitment at the company I'm with at the moment is there tends to be a lack of agility in people's backgrounds. They've worked in formal organizations that are very locked down, very process driven. You know, we look for people who are experimental and slightly, you know, some ready to take on some chaos, I guess, at any point in time. And we find that there's less of that than there is the kind of standard old school security
setup.
I think that's a really good point. I hope you can hear me.
I'll tweak up the mic.
In terms of one of the things I like about my team is that they have a basis of technical knowledge, but that's garnished with soft skills, you know, managing difficult conversations, being able to be customer focused, collaborative, being innovative and adaptive. But they're skills you develop over time on a job, you know, against the foundation of technical acumen and capability, but we develop that in role. And as you become more in tune with your business and with your customers, you're able to take those soft skills and apply them.
Yeah.
And that gives you that aptitude to be dynamic as well. So at 9 o'clock in the morning, with the best will in the world, we've all been there. Your diary says 9 o'clock, I'm doing that. 10 o'clock, you're doing that. By 9:05, it's thrown to the wall. And you just roll with that, because that's what being agile is all about.
Yes.
So it's useful to find an individual with the knowledge, the experience, and the exposure. Sometimes you can't find all three, so you should look at one of the three things and then look to develop the other two. You have to give individuals opportunity to develop within an environment that suits them, and actually allow them to deliver based on the talent that they have.
Yes.
So it's quite important to be able to develop that side of things.
But one of the big problems we have at the moment, of course, is there's a high churn rate. People are moving around in jobs. There's very little unemployment in our sector. And organizations are unwilling to train people. So how do we break this problem whereby we know what we want and we say we want to train the people to become it, why don't we invest in the training? Why do we have this problem where we think that if someone walks away from our team, we're losing?
I think some rethinking needs to happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, it tends to be that when we're recruiting, we recruit exclusively rather than inclusively. Mm-hmm. So we develop a list of TLAs mm-hmm. that the recruit has to have.
Yes.
And unless they have that long list of qualifications, we don't even look at them. Rather than taking the opposite approach, which is to look at someone who has a different kind of background
yeah.
and say, do I think this person might be able to do the job? Mm-hmm. And if they look like they might, then give them a shot. You really have to start looking at what are the real skills that are a priority? What are the actual things you want, not the TLAs?
And also, wouldn't that actually mean that we should be fishing in different talent pools? You know, only just so you know, the IC Squared, we've done our Global Information Security Workforce Study this year, and one of the findings is that our workforce is only 8% female across EMEA, which is pretty shocking, actually. I won't even give you the diversity number because it's lower. So the industry is basically made up of people who look like me. And I'm not the prettiest guy in the room. I can tell you that right now. but so, you know, does that mean that we're fishing in the wrong talent pools? We're fishing in the middle-aged white male pool, not the talent pool that exists outside that.
So I think part of it is that we don't take the time to remove bias from a lot of our role profiles. Mm-hmm. We take the role profile of the fellow who was doing it last
yep.
And post that. Well, guess what? The guy who was doing it last is probably going to match some other guy out there,
yeah.
not a woman or someone of color or someone with a disability or any of the other diversity mm-hmm. areas. So you really have to, with each role, take the time to really, really think about what are you actually trying to hire? What are the key skills? Mm. 4 or maybe 5 of them, not 27.
Yeah.
I think that one of the important things we're trying to do in Scotland with Skyscanner is really embed ourselves with groups that are already existing in that part of the country. There's like mm-hmm. Girl Geek Scotland. There's lots of events that are kind of mm-hmm. trying to bring women into cybersecurity. So it's trying to engage with that, bring those into your own kind of meetups and things. Fundamentally, I agree with what you're saying in terms of trying to attract people for a job spec, but I can't force people to apply for jobs. I get what I get, and we can try and embed ourselves into these other areas. I'm seeing a little shift, but it's still so... Mm-hmm. Such a difference that we need to continue to work hard to improve that.
And actually, we want to guard against the tokenism of I've got to have a person of colour, a person of a certain gender, just because it ticks all the boxes as well. So we need to balance what we do, don't we?
But equally, it comes back to the idea. Funny, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine on the train down here, and I said, if you see a role specification for a security professional and it says they've got to have CISSP, they've got to have CIS, and they're going to have that. And there's no real mention about what soft skills and capabilities they bring
yeah.
to your business,
yeah.
then I would challenge the authenticity of that role mm-hmm. for exactly that reason. What is it that you are looking to bring to an organization? Because it can't just be about technical skills. Obviously, they're yes. important, but you're looking for the whole piece. And actually, the right person with the right soft skills fit, do you know what? I would take someone like that, bring them into my team, and mm-hmm. I would develop them out. I would develop yeah. them technically.
Okay.
Because that's just as valuable as bringing somebody who has, oodles and oodles of technical skill
yes.
and not necessarily the ability to apply mm-hmm. them to my business.
So I talked at an Edinburgh high school about 18 months ago to a room of 17-year-old computer science students, and there was one girl. So why is that? We've got to ask ourselves, why are we not encouraging young girls to code and to then move off into the other areas of IT that we have in our businesses? I mean, I don't have the answer for that, but we've got to try and encourage people from a very early age, and girls mm. especially, that there are careers to be had in these disciplines,
yes.
and coding is one of them. And some, I think, in the UK, we are trying to move more towards that, but it's going to be a long process before we see tangible results.
I mean, unfortunately, of course, what you hit the nail on the head there about the fact that not enough people actually want to come into our profession. And again, from our study, our shortfall is about 350,000 across EMEA by 2022. So there'd be 350,000 security jobs left unfilled, right? That's a big number. That's probably the city where I live or the town where I live. We have to do what we have at the moment. So how do we make the best of what we have? Obviously, you know, fish in bigger talent pools, try and attract people maybe to transition into our profession. But what else can we do? Is it just the fact that we don't sell ourselves properly? Is it just that we don't explain to people the value we bring to a business? What is that? What are some of the blockers that we know about that we can actually overcome?
Well, that's an interesting point, isn't it? So how many people in the audience still feel that they are personified as blockers to their business? Hands up, quick show of hands. Anybody still feel that they've got that round their neck?
If you think the business regards you as a blocker, raise your hands. That's the question.
Ooh. So interesting. Is that an inhibitor? Do people not want to work in a career have a career in security because they feel that they're just going to be the pariah and they're not adding value and they're not making a difference and contributing? Maybe we need to look at our brand. And are we, you know, we talk about security now being an enabler of good, safe, reliable, resilient business. Mm. So maybe we should be marketing ourselves slightly differently.
Yes.
I don't know whether anyone's got a view.
I think part of the problem is that young people are often looking to complete their education with a title, doctor, lawyer, engineer, cybersecurity professional. Mm-hmm. And that's doing them a disservice. I mean, I think that we need to make sure young people understand that, you know, the jobs of tomorrow may not exist today.
That's very true.
And so what you need to do is focus on the skills that, A, that you enjoy doing, and B, that are perhaps going to allow you to have a decent job when you finish the immediate course you're doing. I mean, I head up a cybersecurity team. When I joined the workforce, cybersecurity did not exist.
Yeah.
If I had tried to set out on a career to cybersecurity, I would never get to where I am today. And I guarantee the careers that exist today will be different from the ones that exist 20, 30 years down the line.
Yes, yeah, and I can agree with that. I'm a chemist by degree. I did chemistry and biochemistry. How exactly? I transferred in because there was a set of skills that I brought. Cool. And I want to go back to this because actually some of the questions that have come out here about sort of being agile and stuff. You know, how can we help people actually sell themselves as being agile? For example, what do we look for on CVs to help us build these agile teams? Is it just the soft skills? Is it a professional qualification? Is it an MBA? What kind of mix of things do we look for when we build these agile teams?
On a CV, I'm looking for a broad experience base. People who've done a number of things, and that doesn't always necessarily mean in the world of cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. However, the place where I actually start to test for agility is in interview, not on CV.
Okay.
I tell people when they come for an interview that I'm looking to hear stories about their entire life, mm-hmm. not just their work experiences, particularly because I'm hiring predominantly young people.
Yeah.
You would be shocked at the number of people who fail to follow that simple instruction. That guarantees that they're not going to get that job. But you know, it's about realizing that the skill set you bring is not necessarily just learned in your work life, that you may bring skills from outside it as well.
I think to tie in, not to jump ahead, but we're talking about kind of failing fast, and yes, it does exist in some organizations. If I interview somebody, and I'm looking for a whole range of experience and skills, but rather than just sit for an hour with me and tell me all the good things you've done for your business, which will be many, tell me about the things that you didn't get right, and what happened, and what went wrong, and how you then learned from that. I mean, that to me is as valuable as the good thing you did.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's enough of that. You can only get to that point when you interview. You don't really get that on CVs so much.
Mm.
But I was interested in hearing about how you failed, and how you learned from it, and where you went to get more information, but as much as the good stuff you've achieved.
I mean, certainly from the ISC Square perspective, we do fail. We do fail fast as well. But the trick is to learn. If someone makes a mistake and comes back in my office and makes the same mistake again, they get shouted at. But if someone comes in and say, I failed, but I've stopped, we're going to redo the process, whatever it may, and I've learned, and here's the new thing, that's what really counts.
But this
the
is
failure
not
is not the thing. It's not learning from the failure that is the real problem.
And it's not just an internal thing within your companies. You know, you can put these things out externally. We're very good at it. We're just a business that does that. We put blogs out to say, this is a piece of work we did, and it didn't work, or it caused a production incident, and this is what happened, and this is what we learned from it. So you can share that with the community, and it's all good information.
I think that's really important to be really transparent when you do invariably fail, that you're aware of your limitations, that you're celebrating from that failure to a greater extent, and you're stronger by it. And that's not just within the security faculty, within the team, that's within the business as well. Mm. You know, sometimes you will do something with all the best intents to protect your organisation and cause a little bit of downtime. Be open and transparent about that and engage with people as to why that was important and what you do differently next time. You get much less pushback if you are being open and transparent with your business.
So kind of one of the things is to actually be able to admit your mistakes, not just hide behind that I'm the specialist, I know what I'm doing. It's actually say, well, we tried this, it didn't work.
Well, they say to err is human, and we're not androids, we are
That's
human
true.
Too. Comes back to the point, are we personified as that? You know, because we are technologists and security people, we are very, you know, set in our ways we can't be different. Mm. Well, let's demonstrate that we have a degree of humility and that we are human. Because I think that's the key to unlocking bringing new talent into our industry.
Mm. Our old chief operating officer used the phrase, this is the moment of my failure and I'm not scared. And the premise of it is people tend to do their best work when they're not scared of it going wrong, because that's where you take the risks, that's where you take the chances that end up progressing your business or your area of expertise beyond what it currently is. It's a difficult ethos to embed in an organization, but that's when people feel empowered to do the best work they can.
So you have to embed it in the entire organization. I mean, it's not just about your security team being agile and resilient, but from the top down, they have to understand things are going to go wrong. I have been telling my execs for a long time, expect to be breached. We will have incidents. It's not about trying to avoid those things. Mm-hmm. It's about how well we can respond to them.
Yes, yes, indeed. And I think one of the things that comes actually agile security teams, I did skirt around this, but I'm going to come back to it now, is about leadership as well. It's about setting the tone from the CISO point or the equivalent level and from the board as well, isn't it? So just as a leader, how do you start to create this agility and discuss it across your organization? And it comes back to where do we sit, because I think there's something there as well in that question. How as leaders, how do we sell the agility? How do we create the agility in our teams?
So I report to the CFO. Mm-hmm. My role is more governance and control. We advise the IT team, mm-hmm. and I regularly report directly to the board on our overall posture regarding cybersecurity. I have been doing that since 2009.
Wow.
So this isn't something new. I have been talking to them about the need to accept that we will have incidents, that there will be breaches, for 8 years now.
Yes.
And they all understand that. And I think that's key. You've got to get the message out to every single layer, right from the top down to the guys on the shop floor who are responding.
So it's interesting. I work for an organization that has a model called squads and tribes, where we don't have a flat structured business. It's not like there's a development team and a testing team and it's all these autonomous little squads pushing out code, and security is no different. There's two security squads within our business. And what it means is we're not bound by those layers. So my boss doesn't tell me what to do, and his boss doesn't tell him what to do. It's for each squad to define the work that they do and drive it. And it allows us to be involved in every part of the business. Security fundamentally, regardless of your individual roles, is touching every part of a business. It could be HR, finance, your engineering teams, your legal teams. So it works very well for us. It's a bit chaotic, and some elements of old school security are difficult to embed, but it allows us to really talk to all the areas of the business that we need to.
For us, it's again, we're embedded all over the program of work that we're doing. It's not just in technology, and it's not just in compliance. Mm-hmm. We work with other colleagues in that space, but making sure that we are covered from top to bottom, left to right. Again, If you're embedded within the feature team, you get the opportunity to develop a DevOps person or a developer, and vice versa, you can get developed yourself. You can learn from them as well. Be humble enough to learn from others in that space is an area.
Okay.
And just to build on that, I was just looking at the question from George here, which you can see. Where does an agile security team functionality sit within a business, within technology, compliance, risk, or somewhere else? I think it sits everywhere. And just to bring that to life, what we've done in Network Rail is we have our core security teams that cut across our business, and that's their day job. But we also have a community of security champions.
Right.
And what we're doing with those is we are embedding them within our business. There are people who are displaying an affinity and an interest in information security, and we're bringing them closer to us. We're providing them with support, knowledge, wisdom, training. They are dissecting those messages and they're bringing them out amongst their peer groups, but they're also bringing intelligence back to us.
Yep.
And I think the key to agility in big organizations, especially one with so many moving parts like Network Rail, is to actually, I was going to use the word crowdsource, I mean, you know when I say that, it's just taking it out to the business. And actually, that agile security team, there's a core, absolutely, but it needs to transcend the entire organization.
Yes. So it's all, there's a question down here about distributing it across the business. So it sounds very much as agile security is embedded, it lives with the business, it is championed perhaps by people within the business. But I just want to go back to the leadership piece. How do you create that agility in your own team? How do you demonstrate, you know, you live the value, if you like? Because people will copy leaders and will copy people they admire and their behaviors. So how do you make agile work? How do you demonstrate agility so people can follow you?
I think that's really easy. Two words, trust, empowerment. You know, my team know only too well that they have my absolute blessing to do the very best thing for the organization. Sometimes that means they fail. Sometimes they mean they take the long road round. But they know that they can operate with the best intentions of the organization, they can try new things, they can be innovative, and it's not command and control.
Right.
And because of that, they're less fearful. They will just go out and engage and they will just do these things. And actually what happens on a Friday morning when I have a debrief with my direct reports, they tell me about all the great stuff they've been doing.
Yeah.
And you know, that's not necessary to an agenda or what we said at the start of the week. But at the end of the week, I know they've done a good job for me and for my business, and they feel that they are empowered and trusted to do that.
And that's where you've taken that to its logical conclusion in Skyscanner, haven't you, really, I suppose, in one sense?
I think that agility, the way that we're set up, the agility means that, yes, there's strategic decisions being made in certain parts of the business, but everybody in security has the autonomy to pick up pieces of work and drive them without that kind of top-down, almost micromanagement strategically. So that empowers people within these businesses to do that kind of work. Again, that's the kind of new holy grail of the workplace compared to some of the old school side of things.
Yeah.
The other thing for me is I do quite a bit of coaching. So when people show an interest in stepping outside their particular box, I make sure I'm there beside them, helping them learn those new skills, helping them gain mastery rather than just leaving them to do it on their own and potentially fail. If people are successful, they'll try to do it a second time.
Yes, of course. So there's a real thing here about this sort of agile security team piece. It's quite interesting because it comes down to leadership, it comes down to trust, it comes down to coaching, it comes down to creating an environment for people to grow and develop. And also, agile security teams need people who want to grow and develop, who feel empowered to work, to try things, and then grow and develop on top of it.
Can I ask any people in the room, anybody who's honest, do people employ with the ethos of employ somebody better than you? Good. Because it's by employing people better than you that you learn and get better in your job. Now, that people can be frightened of that. That's the ethos we've got, and it just means that the business is continuing to grow at pace, and we all get better at our jobs.
And I think that's one of the things, as a leader, you should be looking for people to be better than you, to replace, not necessarily replace you per se, but you know, do more, do things differently, and do things better as well.
My success is based on the success of my team.
Yeah.
They have to be the best so that I can do my collective best.
I think as security leaders as well, we need to make ourselves accessible to our business.
Yeah.
I'll share with you a small anecdote about a young lady called Charlie. Charlie joined Network Rail last year as a graduate placement student, and she came to me and said, look, you know, I've kind of worked in group business services, as it used to be called, and you know, I do marketing and I'm interested in security. You know, mm-hmm. where can I go with this? And I said, come and do a rotation with my team. She said, well, I don't know anything about security. Perfect. But what you have are the skills to communicate and engage and elicit the right words to bring this to life.
Yeah.
And sure enough, she joined my team on a six-month rotation. And 6 months later, all my intranet content's reinvigorated. We've got a great social media presence. She's been out talking to the business. And you know, she's keeping in regular touch. And she can see. I can see an opportunity here. I can see a future career. Never would have thought of that unless I've engaged. So as leaders, we need to promote our brand both within the community of practice, but also within our businesses as well, because I guarantee you there are people out there who are interested in security and they just don't know how to get in. And it's incumbent on everybody in this room to open that door and bring them in.
And actually, in some ways, that goes to the question on the screen here about the grudge spend. This is actually one way of overcoming that grudge, isn't it? Is engaging and having your team to be seen to be adding that value.
Yeah, absolutely. And another way of doing that, it's not really being agile at all. It's meeting the stakeholder. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of work talking about child internet safety, helping more elderly generations be safe online. Yeah. I tell you what, that brings people to you, and you can start to have those conversations, and it just evolves from that. It doesn't always have to be about the corporate agenda.
That's very true.
Certainly not a grudge spend at my organization. You know, we are an online business, and security is a key part of that. Our customers expect it, and we deliver it.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see if I can summarize the conversation so far. So we define kind of the individuals you want, people who can grow and develop. We've talked about the team. There's a leadership piece here as well. And I want to go back to some of the skills, actually, because one of the things, again, that we found out of our workforce study is that millennials are concentrating on technical skills, cloud security, risk management, GRC, IAM, and most recruiters and most recruiting organizations want the softer skills, communications, problem solving, all that kind of stuff. How do we bridge that gap? Does it come down to writing better job specs? Does it come down to bashing HR over the head so they don't put CWSP in everything, every job advert? Or is it that we actually need to get people in and train them and then set them loose to tell the rest of the world what's really required?
Well, let's ask Steph. I think she's nailed it. You know, do the recruiters understand your needs? And that's absolutely right. You've got to be really, really clear what you want when you go to market.
Yeah.
And the first thing you want to do when you go to market is also is make sure that you're looking internally to absolutely be sure you've got that. In answer to your question about the younger generation, maybe it's us that's getting a bit long in the tooth. You know, it's becoming a more agile, adaptable, dynamic industry.
Yes.
Maybe we just need to recognise that. I don't have the answer as to how we address that, but maybe that's a bit of us there.
Mm.
I think one of the things I've seen in recruiting over the last year or so, and I ask one of these questions during interviews, is what is it you would like to come in and do? So yes, we've got a job spec and we expect certain skills and competencies, but what would you actually like to come in and drive? And you tend to find that those two things might not match up. People tend to struggle with that a little bit because they've prepared for a job spec and aligned themselves to that. So I think tell businesses what it is that you'd like to come in and change as best as you can.
My job specs actually include a wild card. There's always you'll do these things, but then other duties depending on the skills and abilities and desires that you have. So I always make it really clear up front that I'm looking for people who maybe want to do other things than are on the job description. I mean, I'm looking at the third question down there about, from the candidate side, how do you demonstrate that in the recruitment process? And it's really all about being able to really articulate your transferable skills. What have you done that's similar that's going to demonstrate to me that you'll be able to do that for me?
I think the role specifications are part of the problem. I joined Network Rail in 2014.
Yeah.
I had a set of role definitions that describe the competencies and capabilities of my team. At least once we've revisited those, because they're no longer fit for purpose. They aren't adaptive. I love the idea of having a wild card in there, appeasing HR to say, what's the job description look like, and just giving them a solitary asterisk and say, I just want one of those, and we'll cross out that conversation when they come to interview. That's something that we need to overcome, but I think there is so much rigidity in a role specification that is absolutely part of the problem. 6 months down the line, it's no longer fit for purpose.
So an agile job description as such, where you can chop and change things as and when new technology, new ideas come about, you can bring that in. Taking control of that is the main thing, I suppose. If you're waiting on others to do that for you, it'll be very difficult to find individuals to come and support you within the program of work that you're doing.
But I guess this comes back to one comment you said earlier on, which is that agile, we can't be agile on our own. We have to have the business being agile. They have to understand that things move quickly and that the JD you write yesterday is not the JD you actually want today. Sorry, job description, not just JD. I'm guessing one of the things that comes out of this is there's an education piece here, isn't there? For agile to work is we have to go and educate people.
Can we ask a question to the audience here? By show of hands, thinking of the last time you were recruited into a new job, how many people, when they arrived at the new job, it was the same as the one that was advertised and you applied for?
Raise your hand if the answer is yes. Is that right?
I'm thinking we have one hand, half, because it went back down again.
Tentatively.
And this is part of the problem. I mean, we're not even talking, you know, weeks or months. It's often days that the job changes.
Yeah.
And that's why we need to hire agile people.
I think when we look at job specs, you know, we do tend to kind of write these huge job specs of all these things we expect you to know, but you don't have to be an expert in all of those things. I don't think you should be intimidated by job specs just because you don't know a few things on there.
Yeah.
I put a thing on LinkedIn a few weeks ago about just all the disciplines of security and all the areas we get involved in sometimes as more broader security people. And I think I stopped at 50 or so items, and you're expected to know about all of those things to a certain degree. So you have to accept that you can't be an expert in all of these things.
Just from the diversity angle, sorry.
That's fine.
It's a well-known thing, and I can put my hand up. I fall prey to it as well. Mm-hmm. Women tend not to apply to jobs that they don't feel that they are 100% qualified for. So if there are 17 qualifications that are required, the vast majority of women will not even consider applying unless they have every single one, including the nice-to-haves.
Right.
It is absolutely critical that we start to get a bit more confident and not have quite so many qualifications to get people through the door.
Yeah. Oh, lady there. So the question is this lady works in cybersecurity and she does all the ticks all the boxes, but then she goes and works in a project where there's hundreds of men. How can she kind of keep up that confidence and show them that she knows what she's doing? Because you're the lone voice, aren't you, if you like? You're the person on your own, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So how can you...
So sadly, a lot of us are.
Yes.
And there is no magic thing. Mm. I think those of us who are successful and manage to stay in the field... tend to develop a very thick skin. And really, that's about all you can do. I try to get out and speak as much as possible and encourage not just women, but men to think about, you know, are we giving everybody a fair chance?
Yeah. Good question. Thank you. One of the things that I like the question that's just popped up on the bottom of the screen, because it's very similar to one of the ones I had as well. We've talked about building the agile team. We talked about the leadership. How do you keep your team agile is the first question. How do you make sure that they don't fall into doing the same old stuff the same old way? Because people are, I won't say lazy, people like to do things a certain way, don't they? So how do we encourage them to keep that agility?
So the way I do that in my team is move them around quite regularly, not just within one space of security. If there's 15 feature teams, they'll go and work with all the feature teams throughout the week, throughout the month, and also go out and do other things as well, not just stuff that they're comfortable with. If they're not comfortable with something, that's where I would push them towards, so that they can go and learn something new and go and solve the problem that we have in, and come back with some solutions and finding out a different way of doing something. Mm-hmm. That's
I
think one of the things at Skyscanner is, and we encourage this from graduates coming into the business at 21 right through to the older heads, is that you have autonomy to drive any piece of work that you think is the right piece of work to do. Whether that ends up being the right piece of work is for you to find out. But go and find a problem and then go and try and find the solution to that problem. Mm. And that's where, you know, people have to be brave to take on pieces of work of areas that they're not so skilled in. It takes a certain mindset to do that. You've just got to try and encourage it as leaders in business that's a positive thing to do, that you know, not treading water and trying mm-hmm. to continue to upskill.
But they have to recognise that every day is a school day.
Yep.
You know, I learn, you know, anybody who says, I've got this, I know information security, I know cyber security, no. Every day is different. Every mm-hmm. single day is different. And, you know, I like within my team, they've kind of become agile on their own. You know, I'll come back into the department and the SecOps guys are talking to the risk guys, talking to the security specialists, and they're solving a problem that's not even part of the portfolio because that's what they mm-hmm. do. Either that or they huddled around my desk vandalising it and you know who you are. but they, you know, again, it comes back to the whole empowerment thing.
Yes.
Just feeling that they don't have a rigid specification mm-hmm. or scope or heath or reach. They will go anywhere, do anything, and they interchange those skills. Yeah, moving them around, it's not a huge mm-hmm. team. That, you know, I think that's a great idea and it's refreshing to you mm-hmm. know, try different things. Not always easy in a small team. But they recognise the value of the collective to solve a business problem.
Right.
And then they're not afraid to reach out and use each other's skills. And because of that, mm-hmm. they become a very powerful, agile team.
So yes.
They found their own way.
So someone mentioned self-organising teams. That was you, Mumbaba, wasn't it? Yeah. Is that your experience as well?
Yeah. It's taking the opportunity and going and doing stuff because somebody can and somebody will. The challenge on that side is shadow security, whereby people are trying to do good things, but if you're not maintaining that activity, then it can become a negative thing as well.
Okay.
So staying on top of that to be able to then go and take the opportunity mm-hmm. and develop for the business processes and the thing that the business wants to do is the area to go towards and drive towards.
Yes. So I'm going to go back to the top question because lots of people have put their thumbs up on this one. I would have thought a small team has to be agile, that there's no way around it. would that be a good assumption to make?
I have a small team, and there is no choice but to be agile.
Yeah.
You know, we have to support the entire business around the globe. There are a limited number of people. There are a limited number of skill sets. Mm-hmm. And we just have to go where we need to go.
Yeah. So keep an eye on the time, because you ought to finish it dead on, apparently. Okay, so there was another question which has disappeared, unfortunately, which was, aren't we agile anyway? So why are we talking about being agile? But maybe the flip side is maybe we don't tell people well enough that we're agile.
I think there are some organizations that are less agile, where roles are more rigidly defined, mm-hmm. where people don't get the opportunities to try new and different things. And I think those organizations perhaps have some opportunities that they're missing by not developing their people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I think we're up here talking about it because we do have agile teams and work in environments that encourage agile teams. But I think others perhaps can learn from that.
And is that sometimes you think because of the actual industry they're in, you know, so heavy regulated or heavy process-based industries may not have the room to be agile that other industries have?
I would certainly be able to call out one, maybe two verticals where I think that the rigidity and the regulation is the thing that potentially holds them back from being agile.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, I think the way that they counter that is by the strength in numbers. So you've got you know, office blocks full of people. So the agility is not necessarily required because they've got the armies as opposed to, you know, small but perfectly formed teams like ourselves who have, you know, no choice but to be agile.
Yes, indeed. Okay, so we have 5 minutes left. So I'm going to ask the classic questions, which is, so we talked about agile, we've talked about development and leadership, we've talked about recruitment, we've talked about allowing people to change roles and everything else. What's next after all this? What is the next step that we can bring to make security more embedded into the business, make it more agile, make it more valuable?
I would say it's our duty to educate colleagues mm-hmm. within the environment. So It's there's no silver bullet. It is making sure others understand what security is, helping them by demonstrating how positive security can be.
Yep.
I know everybody. There is a view security is the ministry of no.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's saying no to everything. But if you can find options and solutions that support the business and the business drive, then that shows that you are going in the right direction, and then you're taking others with you in the journey.
Yep.
So there are multi-disciplined areas of Agile's business.
Yep.
Making sure that they understand what security is by demonstrating how positive security can be is the way I would do it.
Brilliant.
For me, it's about bringing the rest of the business onto the security team.
Uh-huh.
Every single person who works at The Economist is part of my security team, or will be very soon.
Right.
And that's where I want to get to.
Uh-huh. Brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, again, in Network Rail, very, very similar to that. Mm-hmm. Security is a collective responsibility incumbent on everybody. And we are providing the capabilities and the awareness and the education to bring the entire organisation into that security community.
Super.
Yeah, I agree with what's been said. Embedding it across a business, this is something we've come to know now. Skyscanner, we're splitting into different squads. So we have SecOps, we have product security, infrastructure security, and we're siphoning off some of these areas so that people can do specific project work. But I agree with what's been said. It's getting everybody to think about security as part mm-hmm. of their day-to-day role, and that's half the battle.
And I guess that comes back to the idea of the security culture and going past just awareness. It's getting everybody to understand what we do and be part of how we do it.
I think we've got to understand as well that not everybody in a business is technical, so you've got to try and reach people in a different way. So me speaking to an engineer compared to perhaps speaking to somebody in HR is a very different conversation. Yeah, I can get the message across.
Yeah.
So it's trying to pitch it at different different areas at different times.
Excellent. So I'm going to try and sum up the panel. I'm also going to ask the panelists to think about a one-liner from the panel as well, so we can have some contrasting views. So I think, from what I've heard today, the take-homes are as follows. Agile security exists. It's all about us growing and developing. It's about us creating the culture and the conditions for people to grow and develop who work for us. And it's all about us telling and supporting the business through actions and words. And anyone else can follow. I might have stolen all your thunder.
So no one can steal mine.
Sorry?
I'm going to jump in so no one can steal mine, which is hire inclusively, not exclusively.
Mine, don't fear failure.
Excellent. Don't fear failure.
Mine would be take the opportunity to do something different.
Brilliant.
And I would say it's an amorphous discipline. You need an amorphous team to respond to that.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. So for those of you who are interested, we will be here afterwards. So you can always come and ask us questions once we get off the stage. If you want to know more about the skills gap and some of the conclusions and some of the things you can do to overcome it, Stand A32, Global Information Security Workforce Study. All our panelists had sight of this under embargo. So a lot of the answers they've done have actually come through reading this as well. Please join me in thanking Vicky, Stuart, Mahbubal, and Paul for a really great panel. Thank you very much.